Hi everyone, it's been quite some time since my last post. I'm thrilled to be back. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Ariel Thorpe, a Hong Kong-based chiropractor, health educator, and fitness instructor. Ariel is dedicated to providing holistic healthcare, utilizing chiropractic techniques and encouraging lifestyle adjustments. Have a listen. Welcome to Powerhouse. Joining us today is Dr. Ariel Thorpe. She's a chiropractor, health educator, and fitness instructor. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining. So first of all, just kind of tell us what you do now.
So I'm a chiropractor here in Hong Kong. I work at Atlas Chiropractic, where we really focus on providing holistic healthcare to people with chiropractic and lifestyle changes. I also do a lot of corporate health talks and health education out in the community. That's a big part of what I do and what I love doing.
I spoke to you before. I mean, I understand you studied something different. I think you did filmmaking university. So maybe you can talk a little bit about your journey on how you transitioned from that to like another career and now to chiropractic.
I did not at all start out my career in chiropractic, even though it's so funny. When I was a kid, my parents used to say to my brother and I, if either of you ever wants to become a chiropractor, that would be awesome. Because they went to the chiropractor regularly since before I was born. I remember being a kid and just thinking, oh, help people with their back pain. I do not want to do that. Lo and behold, decades later, it happened. I was definitely interested in the arts. I grew up in a very arty household. My dad's a musician. My mom's a painter. She comes from a line of artists as well. I went to film school. I went to USC and in LA, and I thought, I want to work in Hollywood. I want to make movies. This is how I'm going to have my impact on the world. And I got through film school. It didn't take very much time in Hollywood for me to realize, wow, I am going to be doing somebody else's work for them for a long time before I have any decision-making power of my own. And I just thought, this is not how I want to spend my time. And so I left LA, I went to New York. I ended up working on Wall Street. It was not at all part of my career plans. It was a temp job that turned into a permanent job. I was working for a Forex trader. As I was working there, I could see that my bosses liked me. I could see the path forward as potentially being a successful career in that world. And yet at the same time, I also had this opportunity to see how that impacted people's lives. So we were a clearing firm, which meant that we provided a platform for people to trade, and we held on to their money for them. But ultimately, there were traders who were using our software, and there were investors who were giving their money to these traders. We would end up with some of the phone calls from these clients, and they would say stuff like, yesterday I had $40,000 in my account and today I have nothing. What's going on? And of course, that wasn't our responsibility, but I was privy to what was happening with this trading. It really grated on me. And I just got to the point where I would come home from work every night crying because I felt like I was contributing to the downfall of humanity by working in this industry. I eventually quit my job, left New York. I had to figure out something else that I was going to do with my life. And I thought, what can I do that is only going to help people and not hurt people? If I kind of backtrack a little, while I was living in New York, I would commute via bicycle every day, which was awesome. One day I got into a pretty bad bike accident, really messed up my pelvis. I went to go see a chiropractor at my mom's behest. When I went to see her, she said, yep, we'll sort out the pelvic injury, no problem. But you know what chiropractic really does is it deals with the entire nervous system. Your brain and your spinal cord live within your skull and your spine, and then all the peripheral nerves come out from in between each one of your vertebrae. And they really control the function of everything in your body. And so when you have good communication between your central nervous system and all of the end organs, tissues, glands, then your body does what it was built to do, and it functions well on its own. I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. why did nobody ever tell me this before? Sure enough, the injury was resolved very quickly with chiropractic care, but I just continued to go see my chiropractor to get adjusted regularly. I started to notice, oh yeah, I'm not getting sick as often anymore. And I'm not getting menstrual cramps. And I'm functioning better as an athlete. And so for me, chiropractic just became the foundation of my lifestyle and my healthcare. And so as the years went on, then when I was having this crisis of faith about my career, one day I was at the chiropractor watching him adjust. I thought, I can do that. And so I went back to school. It was a long journey because obviously I had studied film in undergrad. I was never a science person. I had to start at high school level chemistry, work my way through all of the pre-med so that I could go to chiropractic school and then start practicing. It was definitely a long journey.
How many years?
Well, I did 4 years of undergrad. I had a year and a half of all of the pre-med and then 3.5 years of chiropractic school. So I just had so much science and math that I had to make up for because I hadn't done any of it in undergrad. And so in order to do all of the science that was required in chiropractic school, I had to start where I had left off, which was not very far along.
Wow. Well, that's dedication. I mean, is there anywhere in between that you feel like, okay, maybe this wasn't really it, or you were really sure?
You know, once I made that decision to achieve that goal and be a chiropractor, There was no point at which I wavered. When I decided to go back to school, I knew that the only way I was going to make it through was if I really started where I had left off with my education. I didn't try and skip ahead and, oh, I kind of get the chemistry enough, I'll be able to make it through. No, I had no compunction about just going and taking a not even 100 level chemistry class at my community college. It was like, no, Ariel, you don't know how an electron works. Start there. Because of that, it made the education so much easier. All of a sudden, learning science wasn't this huge burden that it had been when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. It was fun and it had a purpose and I had more perspective on the world. And so I could apply it to my everyday life. I think that when I was a teenager and when I was in undergrad, I didn't think about the world in the same way. I didn't have the same level of curiosity about everything that I did later on. As an older person, I cared more about how it all fit in with everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, it's having that reason, right? Because you're right, like in school, a lot of it is just like, okay, well, you just have to study it, get the grade, move on. So most people are like, okay, I studied something, but then what, right? That's not really what I wanted to do. Most people are not exposed to what else is possible and what else is the purpose, right? To drive them. So it's quite interesting that you're like, it kind of flipped the switch, right? So once you have that purpose, you went from like non-science person to this is fine. Like I'll do it because I know what it would get me to. So I think, yeah, that's a great kind of fundamental principle that I think a lot of education should be based on. And so that's quite interesting. Great drive that you kind of stuck with it.
Having that goal is really important, that big reason, but you have to also align that goal with what you value. There have certainly been times in my life where I've had a goal about something and it hasn't truly aligned with what I care about. It's been the right thing to do, you know? And I think a lot of people, I see it a lot here. People think, okay, this is the right thing that I should focus on. Sometimes perseverance just gets them through and sometimes social pressure gets them through, but they're miserable. When we truly figure out, okay, what is it that I care about in my life that I want to achieve, that I want to contribute to society, then let me set the goal according to that. That makes it so much easier then to achieve that goal. Right?
It's not just the goal, it's to align it to what you value and what you enjoy, what you then become passionate about. Because once you have the passion, then that drives everything, right? Once you were completed with your studies, was it like a tough path to get into, you know, the practice? And is there things that you have to specialize in, or did you kind of move from one area to another area of chiropractic?
Well, it's kind of funny because when I first went back to school, I didn't actually want to practice. I just wanted to have all of this information. I wanted to have this broad scope of practice. In California, chiropractors have a very broad scope. We can do nutrition. We're required to do physical therapy modalities in order to graduate. We can do exercise. We can help people in so many different ways. We can read blood labs, all of this. What I loved was having all of that information and those tools available to me so that I could figure out what's the best way that I can help people. Mm-hmm. I have always loved educating. And so I think a big part of it also was, okay, how can I have a broad scope of knowledge so that I can then figure out how I really want to help people achieve health? When I first graduated, I didn't have a plan to go into practice. Just jobs started landing in my lap, going in and working as a locum. I would cover for chiropractors when they were out of the office. Those jobs kind of led from one to another. Then I got to a point where I started having a longer and longer wait list of clients who wanted to come in and see me. And a lot of them were nervous about getting adjusted and they didn't trust anyone else. And so I would try and refer them to other chiropractors and they wouldn't go. And so finally, when my wait list kind of got long enough, I thought, well, I guess the next thing to do is start my own practice. Yeah. So then I did that. And so it was almost by accident that I started my practice in San Francisco. Wow. And I started seeing people. I realized as I started practicing that, yes, education is still this hugely important component of anybody's healthcare, right? We all have to be responsible for our own health and we have to understand a certain amount about our bodies. Mm-hmm. Then when you start providing care for people and you hear people say the care you gave them changed their life and you hear the results that they have, there's nothing like that. Right. It's incredible. And so of course you kind of want to continue.
Yeah. You're making a positive difference, right? Versus your previous job that like you feel like you're adding to the problem. Now you're solving someone's problem.
Yeah. No one ever called in to the Forex trading office and said, oh my God, thank you so much for making me $1 million. Never heard that on a phone call.
Well, that's awesome. How did you make the transition from San Francisco to Hong Kong? You grew up here, right? You said.
I did. Yeah. I grew up in Hong Kong. I left to go to undergrad and, you know, started my career and everything. I actually was not at all intending to move back to Hong Kong. I actually went to Bali to visit my parents on holiday 2 days before COVID hit America. I was only going to be gone for a month, just on vacation, visiting my parents. Then, of course, the entire world shut down. This was March of 2020. Oh my God. I realized, okay, I'm going to have to wait this out. Well, I might as well go up to Hong Kong, stay with my brother. My brother has been living here this whole time. So I thought, oh, I'll wait it out with the family up there. And so I came up to Hong Kong, months and months went on. And eventually I just got to the point where I thought, I am not going to go back. Things were not looking good in California. You know, I had referred my patients out to see other chiropractors while I was gone anyway. So they were all being taken care of.
But,
and so, yeah, I closed my practice remotely. I had help from my family and incredible friends to help move all my stuff out of my apartment and ship some of it to me, shipped my cats to me, found a job at a practice here that I love. And I just kind of started a new life here.
Wow. Pretty amazing that it's done all remotely as well.
Yeah. A total COVID story, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hilarious. I went on vacation and never left.
I mean, it's good that you're at least familiar with Hong Kong. And I guess that's the reason you came here. But still, that's pretty big decision to make completely.
My family has wanted me back in Asia for pretty much the entire time that I've been gone. So it was an easy decision to make. I had this family here that really wanted me back.
What is the hardest part then, the transitioning and starting again your practice here?
You know, I was a one-woman show in San Francisco. And I was practicing chiropractic part-time and teaching fitness part-time. And I was teaching Pilates at a boutique fitness studio. I was teaching at Equinox Big Gym. Then to move here and focus only on chiropractic, I knew that I did want to simplify my life and schedule in a sense to transition into working with a team and not getting to make all of my own decisions about everything with my work life anymore. Yeah, there was certainly considerations to make and kind of deciding, okay, I'm gonna give up some of the freedom that I had, but ultimately I knew that I really love working with a team. I didn't love practicing by myself in San Francisco. It was great helping people, but the business side of it was not appealing to me in that regard. And so I think that really just focusing on the positives rather than the drawbacks was really important for me making that decision, because I did feel like I was making some sacrifices in a way. You know, it would have been easy for me to get upset about those things, but I tend to be a pretty optimistic person, and I just want to err on the side of finding the solution, finding the best side of things. And so I really honed in on that and focused on that in order to create what I wanted to create here, which was working with the team and getting to help people in a different way than how I did in San Francisco. Another great thing about the broad scope of practice with chiropractic is that you can have a completely different experience going to some chiropractic offices versus another. I think as with anything, finding any doctor, to go to one random doctor and think, well, okay, I'm just going to go with this one, you're not necessarily going to end up with the experience that really aligns with what you need and what you want. It took a lot of me adapting to this new way of providing care for people. But ultimately, the results that I see in practicing this way are way above and beyond what I was helping people with in San Francisco. So the payoff has been huge.
What are the main differences again?
I mean, even just the style of adjusting. So when we put our hands on people and give them an adjustment, there are so many different ways that you can adjust a spine. I adjust totally differently now than I did before. And then also the structure of their care. We really focus on specific changes in people's lives. We really look at underlying structural changes that can be made in somebody's spine and measure their nervous system activity in a way that I never did in San Francisco. Even just the different orthopedic and neurological tests that we do when somebody comes in for the first time are different than the ones that I used in San Francisco. I think that what we measure now gives a more complete idea of somebody's entire health versus what I was doing in San Francisco. It's definitely an improvement. I'm so happy with everything that I've managed to do here.
Right. And kind of going back to the educating piece, and you said also you do a lot of corporate talks. So maybe you can speak to how you transition, not transition, I guess is additional to your chiropractic practices.
So I was doing a fair amount of corporate events in San Francisco as well. I would go in and, you know, do a movement piece for Uber, or, you know, get everybody as they're sitting through a day of training. I would, you know, get everybody to stand up and let's move together and, you know, team building and let's laugh. But I would also do educational kind of lunch and learns at different startups or corporates. I try and provide what a company needs in terms of, do they think that the ergonomic setup in their office is not where it needs to be? Or are people really stressed out and they need some stress management techniques? My favorite topic to talk on is women's health. And so I love going in and talking about that. I also love talking about men's health. I get a kick out of talking about men's health because, of course, the audience can get a little uncomfortable essentially getting a sex ed talk from me. But as a non-employee at all of these companies, I can kind of get away with coming in and saying whatever I want, right? Because HR isn't going to get mad at me, right? No, it's a great opportunity to really shed light on topics that I think people otherwise just never learn about. And I think particularly with women's health, such a big piece of that is that we don't ever get a complete picture of what our reproductive health entails. It's usually people who've had kids who understand how their cycle works, right? Yes. Because they've had to learn in order to get pregnant and have a kid. But for that, a lot of women, I think, view their cycle as something that they have to deal with and put up with. From my perspective, you know, I see the human body as this walking miracle. It is amazing that it just regulates itself and it goes through these cycles and it knows exactly what to do as long as it's given the environment to support it, both internally and externally. I think that one thing that we're never taught as girls and women is that our cycle is this superpower. We don't realize that if we really tap into what every phase of our cycle allows us to do and how we can nurture that and support it, we actually get a lot out of using it as a tool. Like, for example, when we're bleeding, right, mm-hmm. during our menstruation, we are at our lowest female sex hormone level. So relatively speaking, we're also at our highest male sex hormone, testosterone. Okay. And so this actually gives us an advantage when we're working out. Ooh. It makes us most like a man. I don't like to always put it that way, but essentially, if we just put it in very basic terms, we then can achieve our higher goals and actually hit better personal records and personal bests. One example is back in 2002, a woman set a new world record for the marathon while she was on her period experiencing cramps. That's not an accident. It's because she was primed to do her best during that time. And one thing that people don't realize is when we're on birth control or on synthetic hormones that are suppressing our cycle and putting us into a kind of permanently high female sex hormone state, we never get that opportunity to have that relatively high testosterone. And so we are suppressing our ability as athletes. For decades, coaches would put professional athletes on birth control in order to suppress their cycle so that they wouldn't menstruate, thinking that this is the solution. Oh, then we don't have to deal with the period. The period's going to let you achieve that world record, you know? So wow. It's stuff like that, that I think that's super cool. That yeah. applies to my life. And so right. I want to share that with people. We should all know that.
Makes sense. I mean, in terms of like hormone, you know, but you don't really translate it to, wow, I'm going to be more physically primed, right? And because when you're on that cycle, you just kind of want to lay down. So let alone going to gym or doing like my personal best run or something. Well, I have a kid now, 4.5. And so I didn't have to think about it until I, you know, want to have a kid. Then you're like, oh, okay, I got to manage the cycle. And then you realize there's a lot more detail to it. And then after that, how your body adjusts as well, or for better or worse. So then being more educated with it, but why isn't there more mainstream talk about it? Yeah, that's women's side. I'm sure there's a lot of men's health that men don't know about too, right? And they just kind of take it for granted or just don't know what happened.
I think that also it bleeds over into, no pun intended, it bleeds over into these other areas of our lives. You know, I love looking at humans from this perspective of we are both animals, but also this kind of crazy planning, thinking, evolving animal as well. When we get to the point of ovulation in our cycle, for example, when we release an egg, that's when our body is essentially saying, I want to get pregnant. That affects how we act and how we engage in society, right? Whether we realize it or not, it has an effect on our hormones, all of the different chemicals running through our body that cause us to either be more social or less social. Of course, if we're ovulating from a purely physiological standpoint, our body wants to find a mate and wants to procreate. From a work perspective, that means when we're ovulating is the best time for us to go out and get new clients. It's the best time for us to have face-to-face meetings with people because we show our best selves. Can you imagine if the corporate world understood this about women and were non-judgmental about it? If we put women out when they're ovulating and had them client facing, have them go out and create new business, we would probably be more successful in business. Mm-hmm. But instead, we have this story surrounding women's reproductive health and our cycles, and there's so much judgment around it, rather than looking at it like this superpower that we get to use in order to create the best possible outcomes for ourselves. And, you know, it's like the body is, it's constantly talking to us and giving us feedback and telling us what we need. You know, when you think about what a craving is, it's our body telling us what nutrition it needs. You know, our body's so brilliant. We just need to shut up and listen sometimes, and it tells us what to do.
So with all the training, do you see like kind of a few areas that you want to focus on? Is that something that the audience and corporate usually requests?
Or? Yeah, exactly. So sometimes it's great when companies already have wellness programs that are put into place. And sometimes companies will already have themes for every month. And so they want someone specifically to come in and talk about heart health. Sometimes though, they don't know what they want. And so in that case, I'm happy to say, well, these are my most popular topics. You pick what you want. It's great when a company is more cognizant of different groups within their employees. Yeah, sometimes they are more keen to have a women's health talk or a men's health talk because they recognize that women need to be supported and empowered at work. It's always great when that's the case, for sure.
And do you work a lot with fitness group as well? Is that something you kind of do joint programs with?
I recently did a health talk at a personal training gym. That was super fun. It was for personal trainers themselves. What's cool about that is you can get away with kind of having a more nuanced conversation in terms of the anatomy and physiology of the body, because they're more on the same page in terms of looking at the body the same way. I'm happy to really go at a very basic level, but yeah, it's fun when I get to talk to other professionals, either, you know, other chiropractors. I love doing seminars with chiropractors. That's awesome. But also, yeah, anybody who understands the body is definitely receptive in a different way.
And what are some of your routines, whether it's from a diet perspective or exercise perspective?
I would say in terms of both, I've kind of spent enough time at this point learning about my own body and honing in on what works and what doesn't work. So at this point, I think that things are pretty routine in my life. I don't have to think about it so much anymore. But from an exercise standpoint, I definitely try and just move my body every day in some way or another. Thankfully, I do a very physical job. And so I am required to move my body. I am physically moving humans on a daily basis. Yes, that works my body, but also because I know that's what I have to do, it forces me to train outside of that so that I am physically strong and protected in my own body so that I can show up and provide that care every day. One thing that was really important to me as I was going through chiropractic school, as we were learning about what plagues the average person, I realized, whoa, if I don't have a strong core, I am not going to sustain myself in practice for 10, 20, 50 years, right? So I better start working on that now. And so found the workouts that I liked doing. I got into reformer Pilates. I did spinning to keep my, you know, indoor cycling, keep my cardio going, weight training, of course. And so I kind of started a routine early on. And at this point now, I don't have to really think about, okay, am I getting weights in at least twice a week? Am I doing some sort of cardio at least this many times a week? Now at this point, I can kind of listen to my body and I know when, ooh, I did weights too many days in a row and my body wants to break it up a little bit and I better get on the bike or I better go for a trail run. I like to keep it fresh for myself. So I'll come up with random goals for myself in order to give myself something new to think about. So right now, for example, I'm working on being able to do a walking handstand and the splits. Both are out there challenges for me. Yeah. The amazing thing about the human body is our neurology is plastic, which means that it's changeable. We can, the idea that old dog, new tricks, you can't learn something new, completely wrong. You can learn something new at any point. And I am a testament to that because I can't believe it, but I can do a handstand and I can walk a couple of steps now.
Oh, wow.
But that kind of helps keep me on point with the movement piece. Yeah, in terms of nutrition, especially when you go through school, you use your body as a little bit of a laboratory and you test out a lot on yourself. You'll learn about, oh, ketogenic diet, let me try that out. Paleo, let me try that out. Fasting, let me try that out. You know, all of those things. And you sort of go through all of that and see how it affects your own body. And so at this point, really, I take an approach of making sure that, yep, I'm getting enough protein in my diet. I know that I need a certain amount of that if I'm going to sustain myself through the day and keep my energy level relatively level. And then, of course, staying hydrated and not eating a crazy amount of sugar. Sugar just totally throws our body for a loop. It is so bad for us. You know, I'm definitely not a don't eat anything bad for you ever type person. That'll drive most people crazy. But in general, I try not to overindulge in things that aren't bad for me.
Wow. Yeah. Sugar is the toughest. Everybody knows it's bad, but I guess it's conditioning, right? If you start off young and have it all the time, then it's just kind of part of the diet.
There's a really cool book called, I'm blanking on it now, it's by Robert Lustig, The Hacking of the American Mind. Essentially, it's about dopamine. It's about our response to sugar in our diets, but also stuff like our phones and anything that stimulates our dopamine response. Man, it is fascinating. And it's definitely, anybody can read the book. It gets a little sciencey at the very beginning. If you can get through that first chapter that really goes into the molecular biology, then it becomes much easier as the book goes on. But it explains why we get so addicted to sugar and how it really messes with us on so many levels. So yeah, it's a good read.
Wow. It's just so annoying. Why does something taste so good? It's so bad for you. Yeah. So much out
there. That's why we have fruit. Fruit is sugar with the fiber and the vitamins. I get it. A raspberry is not an egg tart. I know, but give it a shot.
That's cool. And good to know that, old dog can still learn new tricks, because that's something that's good to have the small goals as well. I think that's really helpful as a general tip to kind of like set something small but attainable and then just kind of go for that. Yeah. I think I need something like that. It's been dropped off my fitness chain for a long time. Try to get back. I try to stay active. As you say, I think that's a key thing. I just walk around a lot, definitely. But, obviously it's not a balance, right? So there's other parts that kind of need to work on, like, as you say, like the core.
Exercise that you like to do?
Well, I like swimming. That's definitely helpful. And when I was pregnant, I actually went swimming a lot because you can't really run. You can't do other stuff.
Do you like a pool or open water?
Both, but more so a pool is more accessible here, right? Like with a clubhouse or you go somewhere with a public pool, even if you buy a beach, not all the beaches are kind of swimmable. I don't necessarily want to go in. Yeah. So in Hong Kong, I think definitely pool, but that way it's almost controlled. I know what lap, or I'll bring my kid, and he's 4.5. So I've been trying to get him more used to the water. So that's definitely I like doing that, because it's definitely kind of a treat for myself as well. We'll go, with my husband, so the whole family, so that he can watch him and I'll swim, and then I'll watch the kid, and then my husband would swim, so we'll kind of get the exercise and the fun in.
And also, it's so important for us to role model being active for our kids, right? When I think that definitely, I know that part of why I have remained active through my life is because I remember when I was a kid, my mom was a buff mom. She worked out, she lifted weights. And I don't remember when I was 2 years old, but when I was 2 years old, she had a six pack. That's incredible to me. Yeah.
That is.
And so, I think that growing up knowing that that is something that is achievable, that doesn't need to be let go of, is important. So props to you for going to the pool with the whole family. That will make a difference for your son.
Thanks. I try. That's the only, gotta do more, but definitely, swimming, water sports and all that helps. Makes it easier. I'll try to do the rest. But that's great to hear, like to, have the role model, and that makes sense. And I've always been active as a kid, so I think that helps and kind of propels it. So that's awesome. Yeah. Any kind of latest learnings? Because I know you sound like you're always learning. You're the type of person to kind of absorb a lot of information, find out new things. What is the kind of the latest learnings for you?
Man, so much lately has been around COVID, right? Because that has really dominated a lot of the research that comes out, you know, when you go on PubMed, as I like to do, just to peruse what's the newest trending piece of research, a lot of it has to do with COVID. And like anyone else, I also have COVID fatigue. And I'm like, can we stop talking about this already and move forward? But speaking of women's health, one of the things that I am just totally fascinated by is now we're starting to see all of the trends with the vaccine and how that is affecting women's reproductive health. We're way too early on to make any real conclusions about how things are going, but we're starting to collect the data, which is really fascinating, and starting to see, okay, what effects have women had in their cycle following the vaccine? And then also, where in their cycle were they when they received the vaccine, and how did that then affect their menstrual cycle? And all of that is just so fascinating to me, because obviously, I think that us understanding our cycle is super important. And then as with any medical intervention or holistic intervention for that matter, we need to pay attention to that as a fundamental part of women's health, and then what decisions we're making. And from a public health standpoint, for sure, but also from a clinical standpoint, for sure. You know, what recommendations am I as a doctor giving to my clients? I love to stay up on all of this. The biggest statistic that I have learned recently is that women who are menstruating, who are still on their cycle, up to 66% of women had some effect following some irregularity in their cycle, whether it was heavy bleeding or a delayed cycle, more cramps following their vaccine. And then the other one that was totally shocking to me, I mean, I've heard all of my clients come in and they tell us, yep, didn't have my period after I got it. So I knew to expect some percentage around that. But the one that was really surprising to me was there was this one study, and it showed that 70% of postmenopausal women had breakthrough bleeding after getting the vaccine, which was fascinating to me. I hadn't heard as much about that from our clients. So, which may just be indicative of the clientele that we do see more menstruating people than people who are in menopause. But that's been fascinating to me.
That is interesting. That's probably kind of quite surprising and scary for those who are already post-menopause. It's like, what just happened?
This is how we learn about the body. This is how we learn about health. It's just a matter of paying attention and then applying it in the future, right? Like, let's learn something from this experience, please.
Yes, exactly. And not just kind of brush it aside, right? In general, even with like mask wearing or whatever, right? Like in different countries, just like stop battling it, right? Like look at the facts and just learn from it and move on. So that's great. And for, you know, for the listeners who, for those who just wanted to get more into understanding themselves, the body and everything better, what are kind of the top tips, you know, that they can start off with?
Invite me to come educate you. That is the number one. Other than that, I think that particularly for women, obviously, I'm very passionate about women understanding their own bodies and their cycles more. There are a lot of apps where you can start tracking your own body and what's going on in your body. One that I like is called Wild AI. You can put in lots of information. You get to pick what metrics you want to follow over the course of your cycle. I think that that's a good one just to start to get to know the rhythm of your body. And I think it's also important to note that even women who are on birth control, you can still track your cycle. It's a different approach, but you still do have a cycle going on. Your body is still functioning in that way. It's just a little different. Get to know that and start just educating yourself on yourself. You know, there are a lot of books that I love that I could recommend to people depending on what's going on with them. Like I said, the Robert Lustig book is really good. And then also one of my favorite books is called Roar by Stacey Sims. It's quite geared towards athletes, but covers a lot that I think helps women understand their bodies better. And she actually has a new book out that I haven't read yet, but I'm stoked to, that's about menopause. So I'm looking forward to reading that as well.
That's I'm going to keep an eye out too. I mean, that's a topic that nobody really wants to talk about, but it's important, right? Like, especially for all female, of course, but to educate your partners or, you know, well, as you know more, you can educate. Awesome. And any next projects that you want to highlight?
So yeah, right now I'm still focused on practice and going out and doing as many corporate wellness events as I can, but I'm writing a book right now, and I'm really just focusing on entry level, what you can do to improve your health. I think that it's really not rocket science to create a healthy body. Generally, if you ask someone, what should I do to be healthy? They're going to say, pay attention to your nutrition, move your body, don't do the things that you know are really bad for you, you know, don't smoke and don't drink too much. Okay. So we generally know what to do. I think that sometimes we just need a little more context for how to implement that. So I'm writing a book about, it's really the most basic, the easiest stuff that you can implement in your life that is going to make a difference for you and improve your health. Yeah, I'm in the process of writing that and very excited about it.
Awesome. Congratulations. I'm excited to see it as well, because that is what you need, right? The most basic, easy to read and easy to implement. So definitely looking forward to that. Do you have a timeline?
Probably a few months. Yeah. So I started working on it at the beginning of the pandemic, then got very wrapped up in practice. And so I took a break from writing, and now I'm going hard on it again, really sticking with the same idea with my workouts, where it's like, just do a little bit every day. My motto in life is one push-up is better than no push-ups. And so if I write one sentence, I've written that day. If I've written 1,000 words, I've also written that day. So yeah, as long as I get something in every day, I know that I'm on my way to achieving that goal.
And with that, we'll end the session with that. Thank you so much.